The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2019 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2019. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and the ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
Let's go ahead and begin. If I can get, maybe Keith, you're on the end. You want to grab the mic and just do a quick hello, my name is, and a little bit about your, I could read your bio, but you could probably do a better job just telling your story. So
You'd probably do a better job. My name is Keith Nix. We can probably hold it about right here.
Yeah.
I'm the head of a school at Veritas School in Richmond, Virginia. Been there 9 years. Before that, I was the head of school at Westminster in Birmingham, Alabama. I was the head there from 2004 to 2010. So I serve on the ACCS board, and been on the SEL board, work with CLT, the Classic Learning Test, a lot. Got my hands in a few things. And I'm a my kids have all come and gone through. I'm now preparing my children to be parents in a classical Christian school. So that's my next step. Yeah. And have my own grandkids in school. I'm looking forward to that one.
Great. Nick?
My name's Nick Duncan, and I'm the headmaster of Highland Rim Academy in Cookeville, Tennessee. And I've been there about 8 years, taught there in the beginning, and then I've been head of school there for about 5 years now. And that's in Middle Tennessee. Grew up in East Tennessee, up in the mountains, but found my way to Middle Tennessee and married my wife, and she worked in that school for a few years and stays home with our two boys now. And we're preparing to be parents in the next couple years, HRA parents. So we've been teachers, administrators, and so I think usually I hear a lot of people's stories, and the reverse is true. They're a parent, they get sucked in, they become a teacher, they become an administrator. But our experience is kind of flip-flopped in that way, so glad to be here.
I'm Leslie Collins. I'm the head of school at Covenant Academy, which is in Cypress, Texas, which is in Northwest Houston. Before I was at Covenant, we lived in Hawaii for 2 years, helping Trinity Christian School transition to a classical model from a typical Christian school model. And prior to that, I was the founding headmistress at Rockbridge Academy, which started in 1995. So this is the first year that we have no children at our school. So our youngest of our four graduated this year, and we're pretty excited. So very fun.
Great. Welcome, panel. So I know the angle of this room is kind of interesting. So if you're over here, I will try to get out of your way so you can see. And at the same time, I'm going to float around. So the format for this is going to be, I've got some questions just to get things rolling, but I really want this to be interactive, and I assume you're here because there's some questions you're hoping to get answered. So I would love to have you actually voice those, and I will roam around with a microphone and give you the mic and let you actually frame up a question for our panel. But you know, the first thing I'd like to get started on with our three experienced experts up here, and I guess we can just put this out for you guys. And that is, you know, I mentioned earlier as we began the day that we are, on the one hand, in a very static industry. Classical Christian education hopefully is going to be the same yesterday, today, and forever. Shakespeare hopefully isn't going to get completely rewritten, although it probably is, but will we use that version? Probably not. But the point is, in many ways, things are static. In other ways, things are changing so quickly. Since June of 2007, the smartphone came online, and everybody is scrambling since. The world is changing. And so I'm curious, just from your vantage point, and you all have had some time in the school world. What changes are you seeing within the parent population, just in terms of the profile of the parents that are coming to your schools now versus maybe 10 years ago? So, Leslie, you want to start, or does it?
Yeah. Sure. Not because I'm this or anything like that. If we're just going to say since 2007, I think we can all see that technology's changed the way in which we interact with one another and the way in which parents get their information. In some ways, they're better informed than when we were in the 90s. But parenting paradigms have changed dramatically. I think, as Keith said earlier this morning, not Keith Nix, Keith McCurdy, parents tend to operate out of a fear mentality. They know they're not enough, and they think that the thing that is enough is outside of them and in the world. And so I think it's much more of a consumeristic mentality. That would be one observation.
Yeah. You guys want to comment on that?
Yeah, I've not even been in classical education for a full 10 years yet at this time, but I think even with our marketing people and our development people, we see more and more things going online, a lot of social media, and I'm a millennial, but I always say I'm not a very good one. If it wasn't for the school, I wouldn't have Facebook, I wouldn't have social media, but I keep it for the sake of the school because I know that's where our parents are at, and so we really have to be intentional about, because for a lot of our marketing development people, they still want to maybe do things the way they would have done them, you know, prior to 2007, so a lot has changed, to be sure, in that time.
Yeah, I think I see it from both ways. One of the good things that I see is a lot more families are coming to us with some exposure mm-hmm. of classical Christian education. 15 years ago, you were introducing it to everyone you talked to. So now, not everyone has the same idea or all the right ideas, but there is some affinity, some recognition, some desire, so that's helpful in a lot of ways. I think there are challenges, new challenges that will always be with any new generation. I don't think it's, I can't share anything that you're not observing yourselves. So from my perspective, the question is, it has to do with knowing your audience. Not there. Generations of parents are always going to change, and so the question is, what are you doing to know that you're in touch with your audience? And so, surveys and touch points, high tech, high touch, kind of making sure you're doing both, so that you know what you're, it's kind of classic knowing your audience. If you're going to educate and enculturate and communicate, you got to know where they are.
Yeah.
So what are you doing to know where the starting point is? Yeah.
So let me, again, be thinking about questions. I'm going to go for about 5 minutes with some questions I have, and then I really want to get all of you jumping in on this. It seems like the normal, there's the tension between there's content, particular content that we know parents need to understand to be successful in our school, and then there's secondly, how do you deliver that to them? And that, you know, the idea of everyone drives down on the Tuesday night for the parent education night thing probably isn't what it once was 10 years ago. Before we get to how you do it, just what content, and Keith, we did a podcast and talked about just, hey, you're as a head of school, what are the maybe the 3 to 5 things that you just feel like every parent needs to understand to be successful at your school? What are the biggest pieces that need to be conveyed?
I think content-wise, they're, I think, in two categories. First of all, you know, what do they need to know about classical education, right? So you've got to decide what you want them to know before they even apply, before they interview. You've got to make those decisions. And then you're only going to get so far, and then you've got to think about what's the process for continued onboarding. And I like the word enculturation more than education, so that you don't get trapped into thinking it's a download of information. The key part, I think, is inviting them into the community. So I do think the content matters, some basics, I'm less interested in talking about it, because I think everyone in the room, and I'll let them speak to it, could come up with, okay, for them to understand what we're going to do to them in the classroom or in this model of education, what do the parents need to know? But there's a second category of things that are more in the category of, I need parents to understand some things and the exchange goes like this. You're entrusting your kids to me, and I'm making some commitments and promises to try to do X. And we've agreed on the X. We, in our principles of partnership document that parents are required to read, that's one of the content pieces, because they have to understand what partnership really means with us. We do a good job of saying these are the shared and agreed upon goals, right? Um, so they, um, So we say we're making some strong promises and some strong commitments. There are some things you need to know how to do for me to fulfill my promises. So that gets us into conversations that isn't about classical education, or it is in an ancillary way, but about technology use, what they're doing at home with technology, with screens, with books. As they get older into middle and into high school, we speak heavily into boy-girl relationships and what messages they're sending. So I think the download of some of what they need to know about classical education, you know, there's the liberal arts tradition, there's wisdom and eloquence, there's recovering the lost tools, excerpts of pieces of those are great. What are the other things? And you've got to tell parents, if you're signing up for this, this is going to be happening the whole time you're here. We're going to be teaching you things you need to know so that you can partner with us and we can partner with you. So that perspective is helpful. And there are things that I'd like to not be playing the lead role in teaching. Some of the things I wish churches were doing more of and a better job. But I've gotten to the point where I'm making some big commitments and promises. So I have to speak into some of these areas that I'd rather somebody else spend their time speaking into and take responsibility for. But that was one of my big ahas 2 or 3 years into it, is being as a school taking responsibility for some of the things we needed to teach parents about parenting. Yeah.
Do you want to share?
Go ahead.
Hello. I fully agree. I think so if we're talking about the what are the core things that parents need to know that you didn't say? I would say, number one, I need parents to hear. Actually, I'd like to give them permission to parent, and I'd like them to understand that they are their child's primary educator and that they can't outsource this. We are not your outsource for parenting. And I do think that there are parents today who, let me assume the best about it. Let me assume that it's coming from a place, a mindset of scarcity, that I don't have enough, and they think because perhaps they bought into the world's notion of consumerism, they believe that they can buy a resource for everything. So if I want my child to have self-confidence, well, then I enroll them in Taekwondo or Karate or whatever it is, because that'll give them self-confidence. It says so on the billboard. If I want my child to understand discipline, maybe I'll enroll them in gymnastics or whatever it may be. I think parents believe that they can outsource that, and they come to us with a consumeristic mindset that I would love to be able to say, don't come to me with a consumer mindset, come to me with a partnership mindset, but the truth is they don't know what that is. And so I have to begin engaging with them at the moment that we meet. So I would say that you are the primary educator. And that we want to come alongside of you, and that, yes, I would say one of the most important things that I think they need to know is that we want to be partnering with you and helping you to become better parents, because you will help us become better teachers. As you give us feedback, you will help us know where we need to improve, and as we give you feedback, hopefully that will help you become parents. I do think it needs to not just be us telling them. We have to have a relationship, so they have to be able to tell us. And I think if we communicate it in that way, that this is what a school does, that's helpful.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I think that would be all I can add to perhaps what you've said.
Yeah, I think I would echo everything that's been said. And just on top of that, for us, and I think this will probably be true for all of you, speak specifically to your school. And so it's really tempting for me to want to download this broad stream of the Western tradition and liberal arts and classical Christian education and ACCS and SEL and all these things. But where we live, for us, we're pretty much the only private school in town, let alone classical school. And so it's like we're trying to create demand where a lot of the people where we live don't have that demand. And so we start with just our vision at Highland Rim Academy. Here are the things that we want to do. And the area geographically where we live is called the Upper Cumberland. And so we talk a lot about this is an education that will, train leaders and people that love the Lord for 2, 3, 4, 5 generations downstream from us in the upper Cumberland. And then from there we get into, as we start to kind of onboard people, all the details about liberal arts and how we actually do those things.
Okay, so real, I know that there's a desire for, I need practical, give me exactly the details of this. So as succinctly as possible, I'd be curious, what do each of you do just sort of in your onboarding? I know some schools, there's required reading, are there classes, how do you get, first question, the families in the door and attuned to what you're doing? Is there a process for that?
Sure. We start with an interview where our school is covenantal in that way, and so we lay a lot of things out. My dad is a country preacher, and he always says, what you don't want to do when you get married is tell your wife on the day that you get married that I love you, and if anything ever changes, I'll let you know. And so I think we took that mentality for a while at our school. Here's all these great things about our school in this interview, and be excited about it for the next 13 years. And that's just not realistic. So enculturation is a word that Keith used, I think is good. So we have a process, but we try to just keep it in front of them all the time. And so something that we've started this last year, that's a big part of our onboarding, is a podcast. And we reference things there, but we call it podagogy. And so we thought that was witty. That's been good. We have some basic episodes that we require parents to listen to. And every episode is a why this, why this, why this. And so because it gets tiring sometimes when parents come and they're like, why do we do Latin? We're like, well, we told you 4 years ago when you enrolled. Yeah. And so, you know, we have an episode called Why Latin. So when they say, why do we do Latin? And I'll say, go listen to this and then come back, write questions down. Yeah. Let's talk about it. And so that's a big part of our onboarding. And in that podcast, we give them resources. Basecamp Live we reference. Readings like Wisdom and Eloquence, Recovering Lost Tools, a lot of those things there.
That's good. Keith, what do you guys?
Yeah, we're pretty heavy on the front end. We require, and, you know, stages of schools speak into this. If you're creating the demand like at Highland Rim, that's a very different thing. We had years where we were doing that, and then as the schools started to fill up, you can be a little bit more demanding through the process. So all of our families have to read the first four chapters of Wisdom and Eloquence and Appendix A and B. So I tell them to start with Appendix A and B and then the first four chapters of Wisdom and Eloquence. So they have to read that. When they apply, there's a place for them to check the box that they've read that. If they haven't done that, they don't come in for an interview. And then there's parts of our handbook that we require reading, so they have to check that. And they have to read a three-page document that I wrote years ago called The Principles of Partnership that has served us really, really well. So they check the box that they did that, and then they come in for the interview. And for my first 7 years, well, all my years at Westminster and my first seven at Veritas, I did every new family interview. I don't recommend it. It fit me. I knew we were filling the school once, and once we filled the school once, then it's incremental. It's filling kindergarten. So when we were growing the school from 200 to 600, I felt like I wanted to admit those 400 kids and however many families that is. So I would do every new family interview myself for an hour and a half, and they would have had to do those readings and come in. So ours is pretty heavy on the front end. Now I don't do them all. We've divvied it out. My team has grown. And then after that, one of the things I say is just try a bunch of things and see what sticks. We have found a thing called Veritas U Works, which is on a Friday night. We offer six classes. It might be Singapore math for parents, you know, K through or 2 through 6 or something. It might be the history, the rise and fall of Rome in 2 hours. It might be Latin. It could be a technology class. It could be a class on parenting. I did one this past year. I do one on dating and adolescent sexuality. So we have about 100, over 100, 100 parents come on a Friday night. They come, they commune, they go, you know, for coffee and snacks, and they go into six classrooms for 2 hours. They come back out, and it really creates a buzz for a few weeks as those parents go out and talk about it. So parents treat it like a Friday night date.
How often do you do this?
We do this 2 to 3 times a year.
Okay.
What we've done this past year is a fall and a spring. I like the podcast idea a lot. We have a monthly book club, so we have a classic book a month. Only 20 or 30 parents come from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock in the morning and read classic books off of our reading list. And I could list 8 or 10 other things, some that we still do and some that we don't. I think it's try a lot of things and see what works. Tell them that you're going to do that to them and tell them you expect them to. And then one thing we did a couple years ago when we were making some strong statements about screens and technology as a school, because we have a screen-free campus. We tell parents to be off their screens when they come to the campus. There's signs everywhere, but put away your devices. We had an expert within our parent community who works in the university setting in mental health, and she's going to end up writing a book, but her content was really good. She did a seminar that was so good, we basically said we're going to deliver this seminar 5 times over a year and a half period, and we're requiring every family to come to one of the 5. And we got about 90%. We didn't police it too hard, but they know that we may come to them with things like that, so they need to know that they're in for that, is what I would say.
That's really good. Leslie, you?
I love hanging out with Keith because I get to hear all the things that I wish I were doing. and so let me tell you some things that I'm doing because I'm not there yet. I don't know that we have, well, for sure we don't have the critical mass, and I think there are a lot of schools that are like Covenant. So we've done similar things. We do parent partnership seminars on things that we think are areas of need and areas of interest, and it can be a parent in the community, it can be an expert, it could be me. And we've brought in Keith McCurdy. He joked about it, but he was actually serious, and he's actually very, very helpful to bring in someone who pokes fun at his own profession and helps parents get permission to parent. So I highly recommend investing in your school culture and giving your teachers that tremendous voice of authority. That's something that Keith will do and also do for parents, because it gives us a common language with which we can become better parents together. So that was very helpful. And I think something that hasn't been said on top of everything else is we have a weekly chapel. That is a time for us to enculturate everyone and have a spoken language that is common to all of us. So our chapel is a time where I am targeting and I'm pointing various aspects of our school culture and as well as our rhetoric students to speak to our school on particular topics. So whatever the students are speaking on in their rhetoric reflection, and they speak to the entire school, that is something that I've either suggested or approved or had voice in so that they are speaking to the culture. And my job is to weave all of that together to massage the truth and goodness and beauty that is resident in our school and encourage that to grow. So I think that's something. A lot of schools have a chapel, and I don't know how everyone utilizes it, but for me, those parents are most interested in what the older students in our school are doing, and they want desperately for their children to be like those students because they see the quality of their character. And it might just be that I always have a grammar presentation in which parents are always coming and showing on YouTube or wherever else. And I might actually just always make sure that grammar school presentation is always the last thing so they stay through the whole chapel. It's something I might do.
So let me ask just the final follow-up to this line of questioning. Again, Nikki talked about it's a 13-year journey minimally, which is, I don't know many businesses that are in that kind of an ongoing relationship with their customer. A customer that, by the way, is constantly changing. They show up, this tall, 6 years old, and they leave this tall, 18, massive change going on. And yet we typically only think of onboarding them at that early stage. So what does it look like to sort of incrementally resell, basically, realign? We've actually thought about, do we re-interview at logic stage and rhetoric stage? Like, let's just sit back down together and be sure we're ready for this. Because a lot of parents make a K-6 decision in a K-12 school. and nobody really comes back and convinces them, and they leave it up to their kid to make that final decision, and we know how that works out. So I'm curious, and Keith, I know you actually are very intentional with the fifth grade year as sort of a demarcation line to say we need to bring parents back in, you do a survey. Will you talk a little bit about what that intentional process looks like to kind of resell and re-anchor parents?
Yeah, I think our mentality is, the mentality that started that for us was when we're at every school goes through that stage where you're bleeding out of the eighth grade until you fully build out your upper school. So I'd come to Veritas, we were just starting the high school, and a lot of the eighth graders were talking about leaving. And so we got very intentional about beginning to win the parents over in fifth grade. And one of the things that we instituted, we still do it now, and it's got a life of its own because it's not for the same purpose. It's not about retention because we don't have those issues anymore. It goes back to the point of knowing your audience and listening to them. As Leslie said, it can't be education is, you know, just them, us to them. You got to do a good job of getting feedback. So we do grade level surveys every year. We actually do the surveys, kindergarten all the way to 10th grade or 11th grade. But then we follow those surveys up. So we do a student culture survey every October. We follow it up with the Survey Monkey. It's a quick 5-minute blink, 5 questions about academics and 5 about culture and community. Parent satisfaction survey. Some of those are correlated to the student survey. And then starting in January, we have meetings from 8 to 9:15 in the morning, and we invite all the parents of kindergarten or all the parents of third grade or fourth grade. We originally started all that in fifth grade to get ahead of them to know what they were thinking, because in some of the questions asked about their intentions to stay in school. So that was the advent of that. But what it developed into is this cycle where we're sitting down in January. I don't have a big meeting like, come here about next year and stay in school next year anymore. You had to do those for a while. But we meet, so all the parents of a certain grade are come in, and we do 3 things. We basically say, hey, this is from the teacher's perspective and the administrators, these are things we're seeing in the fifth grade. Here's what your surveys told us. Here's some things that stood out from what you told us or the students told us. So let's talk about that. And then the third part is just some dialogue and discussion so that it's one of the places that they know that they can come and talk, not about individual issues. So that loop, closing that feedback loop, has been a big deal for us. So I feel like issues can't get too far out of hand. Even with parents that have an issue, it's just hard for them to hold it and be frustrated or be dissatisfied and us not know it. That's what you want to know early. So that's a loop that we have that we feel like we get a good handle on dissatisfaction and rarely surprised at re-enrollment. Yeah. Hardly ever surprised at re-enrollment. Yeah. So
that's good. That's really good. I'm about to bring the mic out. So if you've got a question, anybody got a hand up, I'll start walking your way while they... Anybody got a question? Well, you guys are doing such a good job. Okay. I'll keep asking them up here until you think of one. Oh, way over here. All right. Go ahead with your comment. Were you going to say something else, Nick, on that?
Oh, I can. Yeah. I could just say, you know, something we do with the continuing education is, especially with our, we don't do a, hey, come please stay in school meeting, but we do meetings where we'll have sixth grade, we'll do a meeting just with the students, and then we'll do a meeting just with the sixth grade parents and just talk about transitioning from the grammar stage to the logic stage and just try to build a lot of excitement for them. Because for us, we know that eighth grade is a big year. We're a smaller school, and so 85% of our student body is still in our K through 8, and our high school has been growing. But we're kind of in that process of trying to keep those eighth grade classes coming up, and so we've done that the last couple of years. And I think a lot of that is due to expectations. And so we also do that all throughout their eighth grade year. We're having the parents come in and ask them to, you know, see classes in high school, and also encouraging them to come and see senior thesis, because once parents see that. They want that for their students. They don't want to quit. And something that else that we've done is we require all the parents to read an article that David Goodwin wrote called Lunch in the Devil's Triangle that was in the Classical Difference a few years ago. And it just talks about, it just owns the fact that, like Keith McCurdy was saying, that parents are all about the happiness of their children and how many eighth graders are happy. And the answer is not many, just generally, especially not just with everything. I mean, there are rare, we have rare students that we're never going to leave HRA, we love it. But generally, they just, as part of getting into that logic stage and starting to think for themselves and build arguments, they'll use those tools to try to build an argument for why the grass is greener somewhere else. And so letting parents know that's going to happen, Lunch in the Devil's Triangle does a good job of that. And so when a parent comes and says, I want to, or the student comes to the parent and says, I want to go do this, parents go, ah, we know that you were going to do that because your headmaster told us.
You're expecting it. That's right.
And you're staying at Highland Rim forever.
That's good, Nick. All right. Let me jump to the question here. Yeah.
So talking about educating parents, I think there's another side of education that is like that grimy day-to-day, like how to use the grade program, how to do carpool, how to, you know, sports, and just all these different things. How do you kind of balance that and keep it from being an overload of like a glut of information all the time on parents and help them to know what's really important right now, what's really important for the future and the vision? How do you incorporate all of that kind of education that's not just big picture, but like even the little day-to-day?
I just call it the difference between the timely things and the timeless. So it's like, don't forget, it's wear your uniform on Friday. But yeah, go ahead, Keith. Yeah.
It's kind of the questions about communication, ongoing communication, not just education, but just. So for us, it's real simple. It's a weekly electronic thing, and nothing goes out to parents unless it's in that weekly. They get there once a week, lines roar. And they know they have no excuse if they haven't read the lines roar. So we're asking them to do it, and it's very well done. It's we use MailChimp to do it. You got to be really thoughtful. You don't put a lot of text. You want almost everything to show up on the screen with maybe a line and a few sentences or a few line, you know, a title and two or three lines, and then they can click to see more. But the idea is to try to get everything they need to know where it would show up in their opening screen without having to scroll a lot. Then you can take a deeper dive. So we just have a mantra, it's in the lines roar, or it will be in the lines roar. Anything they, if they read the lines roar, they won't miss. So emails, they're not, they know that nothing else, if anything ever else comes from the school, it's a big deal. It's usually a letter from me. If they get in their inbox something from the school, not their teacher, of course, but from the school, it's very rare and it's very important, and we really save those for just a few times a year.
Good. Nick or Leslie?
Similar. We use MailChimp. We do a weekly newsletter every week. Same exact thing. Try to keep it all in there. Something else we've started to do, though, just as we know how millennial parents work, we will follow up. I have a marketing lady that will controls a Facebook parents page that most of our parents are in. And she'll give, hey, don't forget that tomorrow's a chapel day for grammar school, things like that.
Yeah, we do exactly those things. We don't use MailChimp, probably should. So one more thing I get to learn from these gentlemen. One thing that I didn't speak on with the question that you asked, Davies, regarding how do we work intentionally to keep parents, something that I ask all of my faculty to be a part of is creating a sticky school, a school that is very difficult to leave. And so for us, we actually have a really high retention rate at some of the key points for eighth grade moving into high school and fifth grade moving into the middle school. In fact, in our area, a lot of people come because they want to be in our middle school as opposed to the public middle school or wherever else they are. But I think having a school that is rich in community events and rich in community culture, for us, has been a very important aspect of who we are. Their families don't want to leave us. They want to be part of what we're doing, and they can't really imagine life without being part of Covenant, without being part of what we do, the way that our older students care for and love on our younger students is something they can't find anywhere, including their churches, because churches today are so age segregated. And so for that, for them, is I can't wait for my kid to be one of those teenagers that I look up to. And that has been very powerful for us.
That's good. All right, other questions that are in the room? Yeah. Let me walk back over here and I'll come back up. Can't walk near that. It's to wake you up after lunch. One thing I'm going to mention just as a footnote to that final thought, one thing that we did at Ambrose that it seemed to have worked in terms of just the timely information, we have a little media studio, do the podcast out of it, but anybody can get this basic equipment. So on the Thursday of the week prior, our communication director will pick the top five things that are going on in the life of the school, and then we have upper school students record them in about 2 to 3 minutes. It's called the Top Five Show. So they've recorded it the week before. I will have pre-recorded a joke with a grammar schooler, which is really the hook that makes all this work. And then we'll often have an upper schooler do maybe an interview with somebody playing basketball or a teacher or whatever it may be. And it's all in about a six-minute package. That drops about 6:55 on a Monday morning into a text for every parent. And we find it actually has become they've adopted it quickly because parents are doing the carpool thing. They're like, oh my gosh, what's happening this week? Parents get information. Kids get the joke, which is really helpful to kind of push it forward. And then it actually ends with a little devotion from an upper schooler. So it's kind of a carpool drive communication. Not hard to do. I can tell you about it. So right here. Yep.
You've talked a little bit about information sharing for families. I think it's certainly important. And talking about what the school does and what the school wants to do. I think engagement is a little bit deeper. What we've tried to start to do this year in our school is try to help families really adopt within their families more of the culture of the school. So things like, the love of learning, sharing that for the whole family, not just for the kids at school. Have you got any experience with how to help the kind of continuum of families where you've got some on the very front end who just want to send their kids to a great school? On the other end, you've got families who just love classical education and that's part of their family dynamic. Do you have any suggestions or experiences for getting families who are on the lower end of the engagement spectrum to adopt it more as their family?
Anybody?
I confess I'm hearing impaired, and this is like one of the most challenging exercises I've done in last 10 years, is trying to hear you without reading your lips. So
I can repeat it if I need to. Yeah, but go ahead. I can repeat it if it would be helpful.
That would be great. Otherwise, yeah. I was going to try to figure out the
question. Yeah, and I'm trying to save it from the speaker, too. So make sure I get this right. I mean, it's basically we have in every school a continuum of understanding and engagement from the brand new family, or maybe the family that's been there but never chose to go deep, mm-hmm. to the family that's reading everything Doug's written ever in Greek. I mean, you've got the whole spectrum. Mm-hmm. So how do you, I guess, attend especially to those that are on that lower end that don't show up, that aren't as interested? Mm-hmm. Is that basically it? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sure Keith has great insight on this, but I definitely think we see that in our school is you have those families that you are just so thrilled to see at your school because they really get it, and then you have families that you want to get it. And so I think it's all about relationship, and it's all about bringing them into a community where they feel welcome and where they don't feel like they're the odd man out because they may or may not get it. I think it's about having events that bring them to a place where they can ask questions and it's a safe environment. I think it would be great to have a program in which you can enculturate families and help them to disciple other families. And I wish that we could do that. And maybe you guys have been successful at that. But at the end of the day, I as much as I think it would be great to have a program, I know at the end of the day, it's people that change people. And so it's our teachers investing in those families, and it's our teachers having a consistent voice and methodology and the way in which we interact with our families, the customer service and the way in which we serve them, and what we say, our message is so clear that we're helping families each year because every year is very different. It's just not an information that you get, oh, wow, I get this classical thing. You might have understood it when your kid was in kindergarten, then fourth grade happened, and it got really hard, and you have to think about it in a different way.
Anybody else want to respond to question?
Yeah, we do Just a couple things that we do. We try to track it, engagement. So we take attendance quietly, discreetly on every event. So we have the things that we say parents have to come to every year, like back to school night, a community dinner, and a parent forum. We invite them to graduation and convocation. But so the things that we invite, the things that we expect them to come to, or even Veritas U, or any of those things. Depending on the size of the crowd, if it's a big school-wide crowd, we make name tags for everyone, and if they don't grab their name tag. So then we go enter it in, and we track, and we see which families aren't engaged. And what we do from there isn't programmatic, it's relational, but we identify, hey, who's disconnected, and how do we pursue them? And sometimes it's with other families in the school. Sometimes you're inviting families to help you with that family that lives near them, or a relative. Or sometimes it's just helpful for me to know, wow, I see them, but they've missed the last four or five really important things we've done. And so if I see them, I can check on them or others. So tracking it is
that's good, yeah.
And tracking engagement. We do another kind of scale kind of rating thing where we pay a little bit. We have a few metrics where we pay attention to a few things, so we're kind of grading them on their getting it kind of status.
And do you ever? You talk about your tracking. Do you ever incentivize it with like a tuition discount to come to an event? Is that
no.
ever done? Okay,
no discounts.
Some schools, okay,
that's
no
a different discount. Talk, but no artificial discounts.
No manipulation.
Don't give discounts that are artificial.
Extrinsic rewards, all that. Yeah.
I have a question. Okay. Do you find that sometimes your house system helps families on board and bring in and help disciple and mentor other families? For us, I've seen that where families have been around for a long time, a new family coming in, there's just a nice natural way.
Yeah.
And yeah. I do give house points. Well,
enthusiastic students
when
always
they come.
Helps. Yeah.
We assign all new families a mentor family that kind of pays attention to them for the year. I'm not sure if in the upper school we do that within the house. That would make sense. I think, you know, if there's a new family coming into the upper school, assigning them a family that's in the same house with their student would make sense. Yeah.
So is her hand right? Yeah.
Our school is growing from a small school to like a middle size, I guess is what I would say. And we're getting to the size that we can have multiple cultures in the school now. So you have jogging mom culture, and they hang out. You have help with events, mom's culture. You might have a few founding families cultures. Do you notice that in your schools, and how do you message to the parents, and should you let different cultures develop, or how do you play with those dynamics that you're actually big enough for everybody can't hang out at the same thing in some ways?
What's your enrollment?
We're 144, 150 maybe next year.
Yeah. That period where everyone can hang out is a really short one. So, I mean, you're getting into a middle-sized school. You know, most of our schools are either going to be small schools at one section per grade, medium-sized at two per grade, or like mine, three sections per grade. And you're going to be around 200 or 400 or 600 and something if you're not bleeding and you keep, you know, you're able to establish consistent sections. So the only thing I would say is it's kind of like Tim Keller did a great talk one time and had a little manual going, you know, making peace with becoming a big big school. Every school as it grows is going to lament some of the things that happen. And so you've been experiencing this culture where everyone knows one another. Just tell them that's going away. That's just not going to happen. Our parents are struggling with going to that third section that wow, I hardly know anybody. And that's been a tough one for us. So I think you just, and then you're just, you know, selling the advantages. There's trade-offs. Yeah. Trade-offs to being 600 or 400 or 200 from 100. So to new wineskins and helping them understand that's a painful one for a lot of people. Yeah. They're not in they don't know everyone and know everything organically.
And grade level becomes even more of the epicenter of everything. So.
And teams.
All right, we have time for one more. I'm going to go way back over there. Did you want to say something? Why don't you make your comment while I
track
over here.
I could just say that we're experiencing a lot of those things too, growing up into a little bit bigger of a school.
And we have tried to be intentional. We have a parent service organization, and we kind of use them to have social outings, and we try to be intentional that the kind of a lot of the grammar school moms and dads will plan to do things with the grammar age students, and then the logic stage there, and then the rhetoric stage. Like, so we had a fall gathering, and we had something for grammar school students to do, and while they were doing that, the upper school students like shot pumpkins with paintball guns, and so
is that classical?
And try to bring them all together, and yeah, and
sounds good. So,
just being intentional about getting everyone together.
That sounds great. Okay, got a question? Yeah.
Thank you. So, at our school, I guess it's similar to most, where you have a parent population that a portion of them just decide to come to your school because it seems like a nice, safe place for your kids to be. And then you have people that are dedicated to and sold out to classical education. So what we're finding is that when kids make that transition from grammar to logic, especially, how do you manage the expectations with controversial, quote-unquote, reading material that parents may, you know, find some concern over?
Sure, like Herodotus?
Yeah.
Yeah.
12 Caesars.
I always hear about Herodotus.
Dante's Inferno.
Yes. So we do that with especially if we have new students that are coming in, they're a little bit older. We just own that on the front end. And then we do this again as we start to train parents and students to get ready for upper school and things are going to become more serious. And so what we do is we talk about safety and sheltering in a helpful way and then an unhelpful way. So we just kind of create those categories and we talk about, we use notes from the Tilt-A-Whirl a lot. Indy Wilson has a great quote there, talking about the world is R-rated and no one's checking IDs. So we don't hide away from that. We lean into it, and we want to know that there's evil. You know, Chesterton said the kids know that dragons exist. You don't have to teach them that. You have to teach them how to slay dragons. So we say don't shelter your kids from the evil. Evil exists. It's in them, and it will come out. And how do we fight back against that? And let's learn how to do that in this place while they have time under your roof to do that. And we talk about that versus the fact that because we're a Christian school and that we're a discipleship school and we're partnering with Christian parents, that there's a natural sheltering that kind of goes on at our school. But we also tell them everyone has a different level of conscience. And so, you know, when the 10th grader comes home and says he's been watching The Walking Dead and the kid's like, I can't, but, you know, and then we have a high school student this last year that's never seen Star Wars. So, like, there's just these kind of different levels, and just being really explicit about that with parents on what they're going to find in upper school.
All right. Final comment there, Keith?
I think getting in on the front end. So we, for those parent interviews, I shared what they have to do and read beforehand. That really helps because I'm not talking for an hour and a half on what is classical education. They're saying things back to me, and I have a checklist of about 15 things I want to make sure I heard from them or that we covered, and this is one of the things that I make sure that they understand that balance. And so I'm trying to make sure that we've told that family. It doesn't mean you don't say it again. You have to say it again over and over, but we're not, our goal isn't just to shelter them, but it's to equip them. And so, yeah, you got to say it over and over, but say it from the beginning. We try to, you know, no bait and switch. We try to say everything up front so that we can always point back and say, everything you're getting, we told you ahead of time. And so that's been really helpful because they'll come and say, well, we want to do this or we want to do that. And we said, no, we're clear. This, as a school, we've made these decisions. Mm-hmm. It's great to have something to point back to.
Yeah.
I think going back to that idea of raising sturdy children, we're raising them up, and there I would say I look at our school as a boot camp. I'm training up soldiers so that they can go out, and because I want them to deal with real life issues now. And I think Five Chinese Brothers, I learned this year, was controversial. I talked with a parent in first grade about how it was a really good way to talk to kids about real violence happens, and by the way, everyone was okay, but it was controversial. And The point is that you're always dealing with controversy. Yeah. You're always dealing with bullying. You're always dealing with sinners. And so if you help them to have a mindset in which you have permission to parent and we have permission to say hard things and your kids are going to do hard things and we're going to lean into it, I think it helps to set the tone.
Yeah. All right. Well, I know we're at time. So Leslie and Nick and Keith, thank you very much. Let's express our appreciation for them. Thank you. So.